Hi, I'm Josh, and this week I watched the Hamiltons. There was a million things I could have done. Now it's too late. It's too late.
That's it. And after watching some of the movies this week, I felt I too was going through the unimaginable. The I am Matt.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. And I've decided that in my head canon, Hellbenders will now be the way the BPRD goes out drinking when Hellboy's buying.
Ah,
nice.
Yeah, that's there you go. That's pretty good. I like it. This is Charlie Down Austin. So, I don't know if you're familiar with the Cameron Crowe movie Elizabethtown from a little while back. It was like one of his last good movies. And it centers around this character who designs shoes for a living, has his big shoe release, and then it just goes badly, and everybody really hates the shoe, and it's just, it costs the company a ton of money and sends his life into this tailspin of self-reflection. But at one point in the movie, they make a reference to a review of the shoe from some magazine where the reviewer said that, the shoe may actually cause an entire generation to return to bare feet. And so I was thinking about that in relation to one of our films this week, Carnage for the Destroyer, where, you know, you hear that stupid conversation about, oh, would you go back and kill baby Hitler? All this kind of bullshit. It's like, well, after watching Carnage for the Destroyer, I think I might skip Hitler and go back a little bit further and find Lumiere or find, find Edison and just try to get him really fucking drunk and just so they just kind of forget about shit for a little while. And so then the course of history will change, and then Carnage for the Destroyer won't exist, because talk about a movie that would make an entire generation go back to not watching movies. For fuck's sake! Troy! Troy! Troy!
Troy, are we cool, buddy?
Good.
Are we cool?
Gracious,
man. I thought
we
were cool.
I think this movie kind of sucked my robot soul out of me, so all I can say is, I am Hellbender. Please insert Hell Girder. And this is Horror Show Hot Dog. Hey!
Josh's Rosencrantz and Guildings turning up there or something. What was going on over there?
It has been too goddamn long since I've seen Rosencrantz and Guildings Turn to Dead. And my wife has not seen it at all. And
I've
that
only
is
seen
problem.
It once. Yeah.
That was one of those
movies.
That
could be a movie night we should do. That might be fun.
Yeah, along with Rocky Horror Picture Show and Clue that just shaped my high school experience, where we would quote it in the hallway as we walked along wearing our fucking trench coats and fedoras and shit.
Yeah, Clue was a big one for me, and then obviously Monty Python, and then Clerks, because we were children of that era, so.
One of these days, we got to get Matt to watch Brain Donors as well.
Oh, my goodness gracious, yes.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about that a lot, and it's not that I'm, like, against seeing it, it's just it never occurs to me, because I don't think of it until we talk about it, and then it's gone from my head immediately afterwards.
It is kind of a, it's not one of those, like, oh, yeah, I remember that when that was in every theater in the world, and it was making lots of money at the box office. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Kind of a under the radar kind of deal.
Sure.
You know what else was under the weather a little bit? Was the guy in Don't Run, which is our short for the week, which was suggested, as were all of our films this week, by Troy to Troy,
who got to have that privilege by being a Patreon donor.
He is a Patreon patron. Even if we didn't like these movies, we had to watch them. And why? Because he gives us money.
Yeah, because we are just complete wage slaves to...
and to take it a step further, like, you know, we, as Matt once so eloquently put about the cockfuckery that occurs up there in Minneapolis with all your friends, like, I will happily give Troy the business this week for this trio of films. But at the same time, like, we have a really cool group of people that, like, give feedback and reach out and kind of, you know, oh, what about this thing? Check out this thing and all this kind of stuff. And we have a good group of people. So I think a bit of minor Minneapolisian cockfuckery is okay, I think.
Yeah, no, we definitely, everything is done with love. So Troy, we might shit on some of the things here, and I will probably certainly find some running gag to make fun of you. But, but we do love you.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate the hell out of Troy, and not just the money that he gives us, because that's lovely, but the fact that he is the first to respond to any of the requests for comments that we put out, any posts that we make, like, Yep. He engages, and I love it.
And well, yeah, and it's, as we've said before, like, you know, the Patreon money is always, it's welcomed and needed. That's the kind of things that are going to help make, like, the Twin Cities Horror Festival more possible for us this year. But, for all you folks that listen and, you know, don't have that in your budget, to do, if you ever comment on a Facebook post or, you know, send us a text or an email with some ideas or suggestions, or just, even just to geek out and go, holy shit, have you seen this? What? No. Oh my god. And we just, I'll have these little conversations with listeners, and like, that's the best thing ever, because I've learned about so much cool shit through people that I sometimes have never met or had an actual in-person voice conversation with just because of this podcast, and that's amazing. So,
oh, absolutely. Thanks. No, 100%. Like, and quite honestly, like, that permeates outward. Like, the horror, or just the film community in general, like, time and time again, the boring, kind of like snide, kind of nothing is good enough kind of vibe just kind of dissipates out into people who are really excited about stuff. And somebody like Troy, the way that he interacts with us and interacts with other people, like it's an indication of just somebody that like cares about what's going on. Regardless of the quality of the films this week, it's still like, it is valuable. And you see firsthand how much that drumbeat and that noise and that energy about things does make a difference. I mean, it does. It just does. Like, It's invaluable. And like I see with friends that are producers and directors and people are in stuff and working on things, whatever, like getting people around that are just sincerely excited about things, whether it's about, I've got friends here in Austin that just, their whole thing is like trashy movies. They're really into trashy, shitty, awful stuff. And it's like, and I love them. I hate their movies, but I love them, you know? And it's like, but there's an energy to it. There's a sincerity to it. So like, I love that permeates in our little pond, you know? It's like, I think it's cool.
For sure. And I think that's something, you know, Troy being, one of the hosts of Slaughterhouse Princess, like, they are definitely a podcast that does a little more schlocky stuff than we do more regularly, but also seems to, like, they dig deep to find something they like about almost everything they watch.
Certainly.
You know, like, they are people who, yeah, they love loving things, and that makes it more fun. And so, like, we definitely got some that Troy was like, well, here's some shit we've watched that something about it appealed to me. And so, you know, I think every message I had with Troy in the last couple of weeks has had some disclaimer from him going, you may not like this. I was like, you may be right.
Your results may vary.
But that's fun. Like, if you're not taking a chance on it, then you're just, you know, that's just your own Netflix cue. Like, I like that I watched three movies I would never have watched on my own. So that's fun. So we should probably get into those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Starting with Don't Run or No Corras, which was our short for this week.
I like that.
A dude wakes up in the middle of the forest, walks around for a while, finds a bag with some rocks in it and a tree, goes to a wrecked campsite, sees that somebody has spelled out "Don't Run" in sticks. Right?
Yep.
Takes off running to encounter like himself lying on the ground, and then like as he starts to wake up, the him on the ground, he takes off running, and like hits his head, and falls down. And then he's standing there again when he wakes up. And did I miss something, friends? Or I watched this and had not fuck one clue what was going on.
This to me, I kind of dug this. It's not it's not changing the world or setting anything on fire. I guess that's one way to change the world: just set it all on fire. But it is
change it into fire.
Yeah, this your world is not fire, and it's accident day. But there's an element of like that time crimes thing of like watching someone discover an impossible thing of, you know, or a triangle where like you have that, those are better things than this short, but I kind of like that. This idea of like at some point somewhere there was enough wherewithal in this process for this dude to try to prevent himself from freaking himself out by maybe not making the same mistakes. But of course that's impossible depending on your view of time. And so I was like, okay, this is, it's, I think, quite wisely a short. And just kind of gets in, gives you just enough time to go, oh, and then gets out. And, like, I kind of still, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I don't know what's happening. I don't know if there's resolution that comes from this or if this is just perpetual. But the fact that it's short enough to not make me have to have that decided for me in a way that would most likely be unsatisfactory, because there's not a ton to hang your hat on this short. That was fun. That was cute.
I don't know why he changes clothes.
I couldn't grok that either.
Cause like the him that is setting up the campsite has like blonder hair.
Unless that's like the day before he did that, and the next day when things went south, he had changed clothes or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and like completely different clothes, and they have him like a couple of times they stutter frame into like him with the blue shirt on and then him with the orange shirt on and like clean shaven versus beard. Like maybe he's been through doing it for a couple of weeks, but
yeah, I don't know. I didn't get it.
I thought it was like really prettily shot, but I had just no idea what was going on. And what little I can grok of it, it just seems like there are still some baffling choices in there. So, yeah, I'd give it a down. I don't recommend it.
What do you say, Charlie?
Yeah, I would say no. I would say that this is kind of trying to go for a kind of a sci-fi type of a thing, I think. And it just it just feels like it was like about a fourth of an idea maybe or something. It's not so much like not everything has to be finished out or whatever, but it just feels like an uninformed thought as far as what the hell is going on here. Like with time crimes or like triangle and things, like there's a little bit more, I mean, it's a feature of course, but like there's a little bit more to kind of, to give you enough ingredients by which to make the cake. And I just feel like this is sort of like, you know, kind of a, you know, kind of a half-torn recipe, I guess. And so I would say probably no.
Yeah, I don't think I even said my rating. No, I totally agree with all the criticism. I think all that's apt. I think what it might be for me is this tickles a little part of just like kind of a, is this a subgenre as weird time travel shit? I don't know. But like, that just happens to be a thing that I usually find kind of fascinating because I like to see how different people interpret time travel in movies. So I was like, fine. So I'd say watch it because it takes 7 minutes of your life, but don't go into it expecting something amazing. And, you know, if you're a busy folk, then yeah, probably, you know, you will not be worse off for not having seen it. But if you got some time, you're just watching a bunch of shit, give it a shot.
Don't expect to understand it, I think.
No, that's also probably true. You know, another pass with an editor for the script might have behooved this, yeah.
Oh, well. It was not behooving enough for me.
But Black Phillip does the best behooving.
It was not cloven hooved enough for me.
Ooh, sweet seg.
Speak of the devil.
And lo, as we all make the sound.
Yep.
Who would you like to live deliciously without these puns? No. So our first movie this week from Troy is Hellbenders or Los Curvadores del Infierno.
So, because I choose to do all of my research live during the episodes by asking you guys stuff, is this movie based off a short?
This is based off of a comic or a comic book.
Oh, okay. Because I was like this. Megan and I started watching it, and she's like, was this based on a short? I'm like, no, there's that one short we watched with, like, the hardcore exorcists, but the conceit wasn't that they were damning themselves as a potential nuclear option. So I was like, I don't think it's based on that, and I like I said, couldn't be arsed to Google it. But like, it seemed like there was a source material somewhere that this movie was perhaps a little overly, like, held to, despite that sometimes making things seem stupid. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people would make better choices with some of the characters and the plots that if they weren't maybe perhaps being a little too slavish to a source material that might have been more friendly to what they were doing.
But I think what it is this guy, the director wrote the screenplay from his graphic novel.
Oh, so it's a Frank Miller situation.
Yeah, like, there's not another set of eyes in there to go,
yep, okay,
hey, look, I know you're super in love with this concept, but for a film, we gotta take it this way.
Right.
Well, so, like,
different medium, different needs.
Yeah. Go ahead, Charles.
I was gonna say, it's weird too, because JT Petty is the guy who did this one, and he also wrote and directed Burrowers. And so, I wonder, I don't know if it, like, here's the thing I don't know.
That had a more sure hand, certainly.
But the thing here's what I don't know, and I feel really weird about speculating, but like, I don't know if because Burrowers was like a simpler, like there's less moving parts. You have cowboys, Indians, the buffaloes, and then the creatures. And that's sort of, you have these four pieces on the board. You got to move around, and then you can really kind of wrench some really neat creature stuff and some beauty out of it, and really kind of do something cool with it. I love that movie. Whereas with this one, there's so fucking much universe building. Like, it's just like, there's so much that has to be done, you know?
Yeah, I wonder, is there really though? Cause I was, you know, cause as you were talking about it, I was also going, but I don't know that this is that much more complicated than Ghostbusters. Like, you've essentially got, you know, ragtag team of weirdos. They have some small scale obstacles to overcome, and then the potential end of the world. That's just the plot of Star Wars or Ghostbusters. And
Well, but at the same time though, like,
they don't quite have the right spark. I don't know.
Well, and also, like, you know, if you take all these characters from this film and what they're doing, these guys, they have some big old long name, the Interface Order of the Hellbound people or something, whatever it is.
Hellbound Saints .
It's like, but then, you know, the whole first 15, 20 minutes of this film is like setting us up to understand that these guys are like, they're the sin and so they're ready to go. And then there's so much to do that, like, because these are not our typical sort of hero people necessarily. And so it's sort of like there's a lot of building out that has to occur early on. And maybe that's a buy-in. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's like you got to buy in. And if you don't, then it's going to be maybe kind of sloggy. But if you're like,
And as Megan pointed out too, and I didn't get this vibe from it, but I think that's simply from my personal perspective. And she's like, I really feel like this movie thinks it's being kind of shocking and edgy. And she gets turned off from movies really quickly if they think they're edgy. I don't think this movie's trying to be edgy at all. I think this is just like, hey, here's a different take on an Exorcist thing. Like, what if there are things out there so awful, or, you know, the whatever might not work, so there are people that just commit to doing this shit. And she's like, yeah, but the idea of priests fucking and swearing is going to freak people out. And I'm like, I don't know anyone that's freaked out by that concept. However, then I had to go, well, I breathe very rarefied air in that regard, because, you know, would have my mom clutching her pearls, so to speak. But to me, this is like, oh yeah, that's a really smart idea. Like, that's just a different concept, you know?
I know people who are Catholic who would not blink at this, you know?
And I feel like most of the people I know, even the religious ones, wouldn't either. This didn't seem like it was being shocking.
So the problem with this is, either you gotta go all the way and make them real anti-heroes. Like, actively, you know, like, let's pull the dude off the prostitute so we can get the fuck to where we're going. You know,
like make him, like, hard to like, even.
Yeah, knock the heroin needle out of that dude's arm and get him on his feet and give him a shot of whiskey and let's get going. Cause, they're introduced with this idea that they are these, like, badass sinners, and really they're just lovable slackers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have, like, somebody, like, murdering a homeless guy because he believes that that is going to set him up at the right spot to save humanity while damning his soul to hell. That's super interesting.
Yeah, and then you have some moral complexity.
Guys who just, like, taking bong hits and, like, you know, like,
I don't think that's
having
a
gay
sin.
Sex.
Like,
whatever.
Like, you know, like, I feel like a lot of stuff they're doing is just they're seen smoking and drinking, which those aren't sins to my knowledge.
Especially if you're Catholic, like, you can drink all day long. If you're, like, Southern Baptist, then maybe.
Right.
But
yeah, no, and then that problem, I think, leads into the other, you know, large overarching issue with, you know, different horror subgenres, which is just horror comedy is really hard to do. And this, I think, is a horror comedy, because it sure as shit isn't scary, but it is almost never funny. And, you know, like you said, Josh.
I think they get their licks in.
No, there are some. There are moments, but it is not. I mean, I did that thing where it's like there would be moments where I go, ha, cool. But I don't know that I ever laughed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yeah, there were things I could recognize as a joke, and sometimes even a well-crafted one. But it didn't actually elicit laughter, and like you'd said, if you'd make them okay, they're actually sinning. You know, they're walking around just punching a woman on the street randomly, or, you know, whatever it might be, like to get that, like, darker, edgier vibe, is one way. I think the other way you have to go is it's just you make Animal House with exorcisms, you know, which sounds like a Wayans movie, but you know what I mean? Bring the humor front.
You gotta go bigger.
Really, yeah. You know, get Patton Oswalt in there to fucking do a fucking once over on that script. But if you're gonna make it kind of funny and lovable, make that the point. You know, make it more baby. Like, it was just about to say that, make it Hell Baby. Which is funny, 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 funny. Yes, technically there's a monster. At no point are we concerned for anyone's well-being. You know, or, you know, do something else. And those, you know, those middle lines, you know, we always bring up like Shaun of the Dead as kind of the pinnacle in general for like horror comedy. That movie's not scary. You know, there are zombies that look good. I think that's why that one gets so much credit, is at least the monsters look like actual monsters. But that movie's not scary. That's a comedy that happens to have horror tropes. And like, this is one I think either had to pick one or the other. And again, you know, being adapted from a comic book, knowing that now, I think that kind of shit works a lot better on a comic page because you don't have the real world timing of the whiplash of going from actual gravitas in a scene to cut to whatever, and they're drinking a beer and, like, you know, banging some dude they hired in an alley. And like, that, I think that I'm more forgiving of that weird-ass, you know, timing in a comic than I would be, than I was, at least, in a movie. I've never read the comic. Now I'm kind of curious to see if I can find one somewhere and just kind of check it out a little bit to see if that works better. Because maybe this is really great on the page, it just didn't translate well. But
it is just a little too bland, is where I finally landed with it.
Yeah.
There are some things that it does really well. Like the whole scene in the basement with the guy who's been possessed for 30 years.
Pretty solid.
Almost all of that plays just like a straight exorcism, like, oh, this demon is a motherfucker. Like, what's going to happen? And, oh, he's transferring between bodies. And, yeah, man, this is starting to kick. And
have we not
it
even,
doesn't kick hard enough.
Have we not even said that, like, one of our favorite actors is in this?
Yeah, Macon's in Macon. There.
Yeah.
Good old Macon.
Have we? I feel like I've done him a disservice by not mentioning right away that he's in this. Doesn't get a ton to do, but I just smile when he's on screen. I love that dude. Like, it's so good to see him. So I'm happy he's getting work. Anyway, I'm gonna shut up.
I love that. As in Murder Party, he quickly gets disfigured like halfway through the thing, and then just sits around in a body cast for the rest of the
movie.
Megan
brought that up too. She's like, "This is the second movie we watched with him now, where he just gets half his face melted off."
I mean, if you tell me, okay, we got Clancy Brown, we got Macon Blair, we got Fessenden in there, and we got Dan Fogler, who is like pretty funny, not as funny as he thinks he is, but pretty funny. Then I would go, okay, I think your movie's probably gonna kick ass.
Which one's that dude? The last one?
The big furry guy with the long hair.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The guy who wears the fingerless gloves and shit.
But yeah, no, like all your, with the exception of, I don't remember the woman's name, it's the female.
Elizabeth.
Whatever, but like, I don't know who that actress is. She's the only actress I've never seen in something else, as far as I can tell. Otherwise, yeah, the other four are people I know and dig. I guess it was kind of like their secretary, but I guess technically an actual priest guy. He comes off as an accountant, Morehand.
Tuck guy?
Yeah, I kind of forget he's involved. He kind of never gets fully invested till the very end. And then he's fine, but like of the our four main people we really follow, I love all of them. And then, yeah, I think you mentioned too, the dude that is like often a director, but occasionally acts in things that plays the detective, mm-hmm. who is in general a much better actor, I think, than director. But
the other thing too is like with a lot of these people too, is like, you mentioned, you know, the kind of Tuck fella. Like, I immediately recognize him from The Wire. And it's like,
I've still never seen that.
Motherfucker is tough as shit in that show. He's good. He's really, really good. And like, just a mark of a good actor. You're like, nope. No concept, whatever, that he's the same guy. He's just
milquetoast.
You know?
Nothing happened.
Yeah. And it's like, it's really cool. That just like, so it is funny that in the ones that, Gavadon's in there too. He's the kind of guy, the sort of like spokesman for the church fellow that shows up and
Peck. He's this, again, the Ghostbusters, Peck.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's like, it just, and it's actually, just to go back to one other thing real fast, just cause like basically plot wise, it's just sort of like bunch of sinners. They have to have their souls ready to go to hell. They go snag a demon. They're going to go slap them down there if that's what it takes and go. The one thing I was going to say too is like, going back to the thing that you, Matt, you mentioned about, Megan, which I totally on board with her. I don't like to, that kind of like being to be shocked on purpose thing. It's very irritating. Where it's sort of like, I think in this one, it's sort of like, maybe it's like, it's the rhythm of it seems to want to be like taped in front of a live studio audience. Like it just like has that kind of like waiting for the yeah. laugh thing, you know, like asking for it. Was it the old, Matt, you should know this, the old comedy, the comedy line, like the difference between a joke that worked and a joke that fell flat is like in the joke you ask for the ketchup and in the failed version you ask for the laugh or something like that or something to that
yeah,
effect.
Like, and I think you nailed it. It's too, this movie's way too thirsty.
You can see
how badly they want you to like them. And I'm not blaming necessarily the actors for that, because like we said, I think these are all people capable of putting in good performances.
Oh, for sure.
But I don't, you know, yeah, the failed recipe metaphor I used earlier, I think, is the things. It's like, okay, things I like. Steak, carrots, and potatoes. Now, if you make me a beef stew, I'm probably thrilled. If you put all that shit raw into a blender and hand me a cup, it's not going to work. And yes, it's the same ingredients, but they were in no way used correctly. And I feel like that might be the problem with this, you know?
Well, it doesn't really know how to commit to a thing, I think. It's like, we have some funny people in here, so we're going to have some just straight comedy when these guys are just chilling.
And you've, we know Clancy, kind of, you know, as the lead, can do both.
Yeah. We got that slobs versus snobs kind of deal. He's the only one whose arc makes a lot of sense, because he starts as this just complete wreck of a human and then has to man up. And you can tell that the reason why he was such a wreck at the beginning is he's failing to face up to what he's going to have to do at the end.
Yeah.
Because, like, in theory, you're dealing with these people who are ready to die and spend eternity in hell at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, that would fuck with your head a little bit.
Conceptually, that is an insanely weighty concept. And it is given very short shrift in this movie. Like, the actual weight of that gets, like, a scene. And that, to me, was like, again, if they'd made this a serious movie instead of a bit of a comedy, maybe that would be much more important. But the real ramifications, that would be insane.
You have the animated bit in the middle from the comic book where he's talking about why you don't have people named Clint in comics. Although the whole time I was thinking Clint Barton.
Yeah, just like the rest of us screaming that at our TVs. Yeah. Right.
But like that thing, that bit of it was neat, except for it's the only one.
Yep.
It's like, you don't get to be Tank Girl for 10 minutes and then not do it again. Like, what the fuck?
Yep. We should talk a little bit more about
Charlie,
a couple
of... It sounded like Charlie had a...
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, and you know, we ran into this recently on the more positive side with the voices, you know, where we just kind of go, this is awesome. This has got so many things that work. This has got so many things that click. The editing, the lighting, the acting, everything about it is so great and really solid and just really, really cool. Like, what the hell? Why isn't this better? Did do better, I mean, excuse me. And then this one, it's sort of like, but then there is that other percolating question, which is like, who was this made for exactly? Is what I know that's such a condescending question to ask and to bring up, but like to kind of pile on, because I didn't really like this very much. But like, I mean, is it a legitimate question? Like, is it something where they were so steeped in this thing that they really cared about that they didn't see the light through the trees? And that happens constantly. I mean, I always bring up that Bobby Darin movie that Kevin Spacey did. Like, yeah, I love Kevin Spacey, and I love Bobby Darin. I've been a huge fan of Bobby Darin's since I was a teenager. Him and Sam Cooke were always the ones I loved dearly growing up. But it's like, that movie is not easy to watch, because it's fat. It's really, really, like, it's really sloggy. And it's just like, I think it's just like, if you spend a decade with a thing, you don't know what the outside world looks like anymore in relation to that thing.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if maybe that's in terms of who is this made for? Like, maybe this is one of those situations where this is a thing that the people that are involved in, and Mr. Petty and the rest of the folks, like, they're so deep down in that well that they can't get perspective on it. Or maybe, I feel like it's just a dickhead, you know, speculating this, but I just wonder. Because for me, sitting in my living room watching this thing, like, I was just so profoundly turned off by being asked to do all these things as opposed to being shown how to do them. And I got so frustrated with it. Like, this was just like, this felt like a 6-hour movie. It just was like, it just never
It felt very, very long.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, it just had no momentum. And so so that's why I bring up the question. Yeah, like, we watched something like The Voices with no audience whatsoever, which is a profoundly great thing. And as, you know, honestly, actually, since we did that show, we've had multiple people on Facebook. And then I've had a couple people have just mentioned it to you, whatever else. They're like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah. That was great. Cool. We watched it with a few people. That was awesome. I had no idea about that thing. Blah, 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 blah. So it's like, it's kind of permeating outward, you know? Which is awesome, which is, I'm really glad about, you know? But on this flip side, like, something like this is like, those same questions come up and I just kind of go like, well, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know the back end of this question. I just wanted to mention it.
Well, yeah, cool. I mean, that's part of the bullshit asshattery of being a critic is that you never have perfect knowledge of all the process.
Yeah.
So who knows why these decisions are made or who made them or who's, you know, should really get the praise or the blame for a thing. But the thing is, I wanted to point out that I do think it's a very fair question. To say, you know, like maybe, you know, or to point out at least that someone might be too close to their project, you know, as folks that have all produced art ourselves, one of the big lessons is learning to take criticism.
Sure.
And
oh, sure.
Holy shit, does that suck? But if you're, I think if you're doing this in the best manner, what you learn to do is not wait until you've finished your product to get criticism. You give a draft for criticism to people whose opinions you value. Or you do a dress rehearsal and invite folks to see it. And then watch them, ideally, if they're the best type of people and you invited the right people and not just, you know, sycophants? So let's say sycophants, it's horror.
Psychopants, yeah.
I confused that halfway through the word of psychopomp. But, but you know, and you bring someone who will just tell you what they think, and they'll be like, hey, good work, neat stuff. What the hell's up with scene two? That's from a different show, or that's ridiculous. You have way too much going on. And if it's coming from a place of love, you know, that is the most valuable thing ever. And so, like, you know, having someone just like, you know, it's the improv theory that I was taught, you know, 15 years ago. Kill your babies. Everything that you love about whatever you're doing, have it ripped away from you because you can't keep it because you love it. That's not a good enough reason. Keep it because it's good. So, right. You know, this is a movie that I think needed a stronger hand, either as a, from a maybe a production standpoint, an editing standpoint, you know, another writer, like, you know, bringing someone else to do some punch up or something. But someone had to take, I think, a stronger hand to make sure this movie actually had a sure hand at the reins, because I feel like it just kind of meanders through whatever sort of seemed interesting at the time, and it becomes very tepid.
Well, you know, and
like, by the way, we also get a floating vagina with teeth. Can we point that out?
Oh, yeah.
Can I bitch about that?
A little weird, yeah. Then she gets, like, the two fingers in there and, like...
It's a great metaphor when Clancy Brown says it. Yeah, we're going to go find the vortex and shut it down. What the fuck is the vortex? Picture a vagina with teeth. And I was like, that's a great joke. And then there's literally a CGI floating vagina behind a CGI bonfire... that they don't even try to pretend is a real bonfire, because when one of our characters leaps into it, he emerges unscathed, despite everybody else being sacrificed into it.
Yeah.
That
whole last act just didn't make a whole lot of sense.
The good part of that last act is the hero walk once they suit up and they're like on the boat and shit getting there. That looks great. It's shot in a totally different style. Like Megan said, it looks like a fucking music video, and that was appropriate. And then they get there, and they punch a bunch of people, and that's kind of fun. And then this movie kind of just goes to pieces. So, anyway, yeah, I think I've said everything I have to say about this one, so I'll let you guys...
Yeah. And it does kind of overshadow that there are some fun things at work in the middle of it. But it is also, like, after watching and after letting it sink in a bit, it didn't punch hard enough. And it could have been one of those kind of droll, fun journeys through a weird alternate world where there are these rules for this complicated supernatural thing, you know, like your Odd Thomas kind of deal.
Hmm.
But as it is, it turned into more of the Ava's Possession side of that subgenre, you know, instead of Dylan Dog, it's Ava's Possessions. It's too far into its own mythology to let me in. And I think it didn't have anybody at any point going, hey, shouldn't this joke be a little funnier? Like, I know you did this in the comic, but shouldn't we, like, punch a little harder? It's rough, man. Cause, like, the very beginning shot with that kind of cool rap song playing and everybody doing their own, like, little sinning thing at the table, like, that whole little bit makes you think you're in for something really special.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you're just not. You're in for something kind of average. Anything you want to say before we wrap on this, Charles?
Oh, no, nothing else I can really think of. I mean, it's sort of, I don't know. I mean, this is one of those gigantic I don't knows. You know, and, you know, to be fair, like, maybe you do get hip deep in your own dug well, but you feel really confident. And what you're real excited about it, and you think everything's really solid, and you show the world goes, hey. Maybe there's that side of it too. Like, a buddy of mine here in Austin just got a film just premiered at festivals last weekend, premiered great, audiences loved it, it was awesome, I will admit a little bit of bias because I get a creative consultant credit on this film when it comes out. Because early on they sent me a draft of the film and I sat down for 3 days and worked on it and gave them like 11 pages of notes. And some of the things like, wow. I felt unpleasant about saying, like I was like, I felt weird about it, but I was like, well, I really like these people involved. And if I give them a half-ass answer or if I'm trying to, you know, build myself up ego wise, well, that isn't going to do anybody any damn good. So it's like, all right, well, let's get this handled. And so we did. And it's sort of like, and they had a few other people do that kind of stuff. And then you kind of go, whatever the end result is, the end result. But like, as Matt said, you know, the idea of like, you know, kind of getting that kind of constructive stuff early on. And, you know, as far as I know, maybe these guys did too. It just doesn't feel that way. It feels very insular. Yep. And that's unfortunate because, you know, maybe it's like one of those things where if you're part of that club, you really get what's going on here. And, you know, honestly, like Murder Party can be that way too. You know, as far as I don't know. I mean, I love it. I think it's awesome. I love that movie.
But that could
totally play that way to somebody else. So this could be somebody else's Murder Party potentially. And sure. I don't know why on earth I'm giving this movie so many outs because I didn't like it, but it just sort of like, I'm trying to understand what occurred with this thing. You know, like that's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, but I think it's that if you want to like something, you'll start making excuses for it, even though movies that might have been, you know, more technically proficient or something, you know, but you just like, no. And then like, those ones like, well, they're assholes. But these guys they meant well. It's like, we have no reason to believe that ever. But I totally know how you feel.
It's just sort of like, it's just like, as I pop my head on my own navel, you know, it's like, oh, okay, fair enough. You know, it's ridiculous.
Like, let's say I would rather, and I feel like I would rather somebody start out to make something really cool and pull in people that they like. And almost get there than to have somebody start out to make something really shitty.
Mm.
And then it doesn't matter if they don't do a good job because what the fuck, man, we're just having fun. So like, they're trying.
Yeah. And yeah.
I could almost meet them, but it is just like, ah.
In a later movie, this episode will have an example of the opposite, like you just described.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, that's the bitch of it, isn't it? It's just like, damn it.
Yeah, I would rather have stuff like this in Ava's Possessions than a Dear God No.
Yes.
Any day.
Yes.
So, yeah, perfectly said, Joshua.
Yep.
For this, it's like a 6.5 out of 10 cocksuckers.
Damn it, you went for the one that I wanted.
Because the line
flapping your cocksucker at me is a remarkable line.
This movie does have some of the best stream of consciousness cursing.
Oh yeah.
Of anything I've seen in ages, which again, we'll have the opposite example in a later movie. But there's a lot to kind of go, I kind of dig that, but it doesn't, It never lands. So I don't think I can even go quite that high as Josh. I'd say this is like, well, tepid, I think is the word I used earlier. I think that's appropriate. So this is lukewarm bathwater. It's the inside of a Tauntaun. It's a 5 out of 10. I can't think of a reference in this movie. 5 out of 10 floating, vagina dentatus. There we go.
What a wonderful phrase.
I mean, I think we've kind of covered this well. And I would have to go back and find it, I guess, is find the Slaughterhouse Princess episode where they talk about this film. Just, cause I would love to get another set of perspectives, cause I ain't got the time to go online and read a bunch of the stuff that people have written necessarily, but I wouldn't necessarily be uncurious to find that out. So, I'm gonna be the lower end of the totem pole on this thing. I'm gonna say 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10, 4 out of 10, oh shit, I don't even know. I'm coming, Elizabeth! I don't know.
Oh my god, did he say that at some point?
No, I didn't, but I was wanting it to. And I was just like, come on, you've got it right there, man. Just pick that low-hanging fruit.
See, the one scene where they're, like, getting ready to go into the place where the rabbi is, and like, are you damnation ready? He's like, let's see, you got a Eucharist? He like hands one and like breaks it in half, spits on it, goes, fuck you, cracker, and throws it. It's like, okay, there is a tone. You take that and run with it.
Yep.
You're good. Or you take the like, what we're doing is a super dark thing and we're so dark because of it that, you know, it's hard to even like us. Like, that's a thing. Anyway.
Oh, that,
I really did like the fuck you cracker.
That's good.
That, this just very, very quickly, that reminds me of a lovely thing. My darling child turned 13 today. And,
that's right.
We were up north.
Happy birthday, Conlon. I hope your dad doesn't let you listen to this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it'll be a little while yet. It's sort of like, although a good bunch of his friends at school know that the show exists. And I've explained to Conlon that you have to hand them, but you have to let a disclaimer that I'm not telling them to listen to the goddamn thing. So some of the more tucked parents I don't get in trouble with.
Hey, you, Braden, turn the shit off right now.
It's just like,
go do your homework.
Yeah. I was trying to think of some way to tick Sebastian and make it even more white, but, so anyway, we were driving up north, North Austin to this little indoor race cart place. We were up near, where Kristen, her business partner, Eve, her parents live up there. And they're, Jewish folks. Dr. Trester's a doctor and a fantastic human being. They're both really, really wonderful people. And we've gone over to their house many times for like Passover Seders and other, Jewish type things. And there's this one event that they go, I think it's for the Seder, where the kids go and they try to find the unleavened bread. They go find it. And then they get a thing for it. They get like a prize. Like, oh, you found the thing. I was telling Conlon, I said, well, maybe we'll just pop our head over to Dr. Fletcher's house and ask about where the, cause they couldn't find it last time. They could, for some reason, they couldn't find it. Conlon, these other couple kids, they couldn't figure out where it was. And I can't think of the name of this thing that they do to go find the unleavened bread. But anyway, and I said, we'll pop our head over to Dr. Trisha's house and ask where the cracker is. And Conlon goes, I know where it is. And I said, what do you mean? And he's just like, he's this big grin on his face. He's like, oh, he's the Republican nominee. I did that thing of like the kind of like snort gasp, like silent laugh thing that you just can't, like no sound can come out of your head. But it was sort of like, dad, you know, it's just like, oh, child, you're in for it. This is gonna be a problem. You are cut from the same wise ass cloth that the two dear men up in Minnesota are cut from. Like, this is not good for you. This is gonna make your life a little more difficult, but maybe a little more fun.
This is true.
Or is the cracker?
But you know, you get to be smarter than everybody else.
That is true. That feels thing. Really good inside.
You get to believe you're smarter than everybody else. Yes.
What I would like to believe is that we're going to take a quick break and be back with Carnage for the Destroyer. So next up in our parade of Troy to Troy films, I feel like there should be a word for movie that starts with a T as well. So like Troy to Troy to trials? Tribulations?
I feel like that's accurate.
trappings. So our next one of these things that Troy wanted us to watch is Carnage for the Destroyer, or La Matanza para el Destructor, which is more thought than anybody gave to this movie. Oh, okay, look. So this movie is by a dude named Chris Seaver, whose production company is Low Budget Pictures.
Oh, you noticed that too?
His, yeah. Like his,
well, the
his
video deal toaster is, effects made sure that I saw them.
Yeah, I mean, his deal is to make just the cheapest thing that he can and, you know, get it out to the world. And, you know, God bless him. He's got Troma distributing now, and you can get this film on Amazon like it's a movie, which is amazing.
This is the so, kind of know, thing that, you, like, high school me would see and be like, I could do this. And then, you know, did do silly little films with my friends and had a blast. I, you know, the internet was a little too nascent at that point for me to be able to inflict them on other people. Cause, you know, we talked before about, like, who's the audience for this film? Well, I'm pretty sure the audience for this film is the people that were in it and what, 20 of their friends?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And the thing is, like, that's amazing. That's adorable. That's part of what makes loving film wonderful. And the fact that, you know, I can't remember the name of it now. There's a great, book I've got about the horror genre, and kind of, it's a very good broad historical analysis of it. And there's a whole chapter devoted to the shot on video kind of home movie.
Oh, sure.
Subgenre. And in general, it's schlock. But the passion of those folks is, I think, something to be admired and respected. Just because they love something enough to get off their asses and at least complete a thing. Unfortunately, sometimes the thing they complete is this movie, which I have many problems with. So I like the idea that people are out doing stuff and feeling like they can be empowered enough to just become part of cinema, which I think is a good thing for anyone to feel. I just feel like maybe I don't know enough about these folks. I don't know anything about them personally, but I'd have trouble not thinking that they're assholes. So, yeah. Anyway.
Either they're assholes or they're so good at ironically pretending to be assholes that the distinction is meaningless.
Yeah. You know, if you never break character from your shitty asshole exterior, then you are just an asshole. And, well, like, I think before we started the show, I think it was off mic, I was talking about how, like, I feel like there was a cover your ass moment 5 minutes into this film where a character who shows up out of the blue, unmotivated, and calls them, like, Jews or something, and then says something about, like, wanting to kill Chinese babies and set them on fire. And they're like, hey, that's racist and gross. And like, no one thinks you're funny. You know, you're an awful person, right? And that person's like, wah, something about black people or something. And then for the rest of the movie, though, all of our protagonists and our main characters call people faggots or say nigger or do whatever. And you're like, I think what you thought you were doing was giving yourself a pass in the first 5 minutes to say awful shit. But I go, no, but you can tell we don't mean it. But these are just,
and it wasn't
like, ugh. There was no one you could like in this, like, movie.
It wasn't just the, like, dudes talking with, like, the street patois and saying nigga a couple of times. Ugh. Like, that happened several times, and, like, okay, like, that's douchey, but okay. But there were just a couple of, like, straight up, yeah, I don't know. I don't even date black people. I'm like, what?
Somewhere near the end of the movie, there's something about, do black people breed in the jungle? As like, is a bear shit in the woods type thing?
Yeah.
And that is just that full stop, yeah, crash test dummy into the wall. Fuck this movie. And fuck these, yeah, people. Like, sorry. Like, that's, if you have a character in a movie who is the utter and complete shithead that is being defeated as being evil, maybe you can get away with that. But all these people are given to us on an equal playing field. They are heroes. Right, like, they this are is a douchey, woman who's but just they're been all. This is as far as we can tell, this is the entire populace of this weird town. And you can see the Troma influence. You can tell they've watched a lot of the same movies we have because they're just about quoting lines from other movies almost every time someone talks.
Damn
in
near.
Between
yeah.
The Mad Libs
they did
swearing.
That. I may be an asshole, but I'm not a fucking asshole. I'm like, oh, you
piece
don't
of shit.
Get to
no,
do that.
You didn't earn that shit. You know, like, there was, this is the thing, I remember if I told you about this guy, but there was someone posted to me, it might have been like Nick Glover, another old punk rocker friend of mine, and I'm not even old enough to be able to say this legitimately, but they found a meme that's like two, like, punk rockers from like the 80s, And it's like, oh, you're a punk rocker? I was a punk rocker back when it was called Hey Faggot. Like, that is a joke you can earn and is contextually even punching up. But this movie is just a bunch of people calling each other horrible things, and not because they're calling them shitheads or awful, because they're just calling each other horrible words we use to belittle groups of people. And that's, that worked in the 80s. You know?
Well, in the 90s, because this is, like,
this is
in 2006. Watching it, in my head I went, it's a good thing to know that Kevin Smith is not the only one writing bad Kevin Smith dialogue in the year 2006. Because that is shit that kind of flew in the 90s when he was making Clerks and Mallrats and whatnot. Like, you could tell that, but with him, like, you could tell Kevin Smith has a good heart. He's not advocating racism or homophobia or any of that shit. He's writing characters who are idiots, and so they say faggot in front of the gay black guy who's just mortified by their behavior.
Exactly. You know? Who's, like, there to then educate that character as well as the audience of why that's not okay.
So you have somebody watch all those movies and go, yeah, I'm going to do that. My characters are going to call each other nigga and faggot. And it's like, For one thing, culture has moved on to the fact where it's almost unkind to those 90s movies now.
Oh, they certainly are. Those are even uncomfortable, yeah.
We don't get the idea that your characters have a good heart, because they're not characters. Like, so there's a character called Teen Ape, who is played, who's billed as himself, who is like Jason Mewes took a shit, and then the shit acted wearing an ape mask. And his dialogue is just constant, like, yeah, fucking bitches and titties and nigga, like, and like, you know the words, but you don't know the music.
Yep.
And it's, ugh. So when I think of this movie, I think of another movie that I watched that was horrible, but that I still enjoyed, which was Lord of the G-String. Which, if you're not familiar with that piece of
cinema. Where do you find the hours
cinema,
in the day that you can get so far down a rabbit hole to see that?
This was back before I had children or a job.
Oh, okay. Now it makes sense. All right. Never mind.
So, back when I was working for Kingdom, hanging out at somebody's place until midnight or something, we're watching Showtime. Lord of the G-Strings comes on, and it's like...
Oh, is that the one where the women level, walking in the woods and they're like, they kind of look like kind of Amazon tribally women, that one? Oh,
basically,
you and I watched that together, motherfucker.
No, it was after we were hanging out, but I may have, after I saw it, been like, dude, we fucking gotta watch
this. Because I remember watching that.
Yeah, it's the saga of Dildo Saggins.
Yeah.
Bring the G-string and throw it in a volcano, and like, it's this level of budget and almost this level of dumb, but it's funny and it's clever and it has a lot of beautiful tits and ass bouncing around in it. And it knows exactly what it is. And at the end, when they get to Mount Doom, it's a boiler room with a janitor in it. And they're like, we have to throw this into the volcano. And like, the boiler? It's over there. And it's fucking funny. Is what I'm saying. So you can do this. Like, I will meet you. I'm not being a snob here. I will meet you at Schlock if it's got a spark. You know, Cannibal the Musical. Fucking great.
Yeah.
Fucking awful. Fucking great.
Well, and
but this just, there's no wit, there's no creativity, there's no, nobody gives half a shit about this movie, so why are they making it?
Well, no, I think they do. I think they love this movie. I think
they are enjoying themselves.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing, is like, we're watching essentially what would be if you get the three of us and 10 of our friends, at a bar. And we're all gonna talk shit and make fun of each other. We're not gonna be gross and racist and homophobic, but you know what I mean? We'll all be sitting there making each other laugh, because that's what we do. I would not inflict 54 minutes of that on a complete stranger. I call that a podcast. I wouldn't like make that a film. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's just, it's like, don't, I get it. You guys all had a blast doing this, but that doesn't make it a movie. You made each other laugh. That doesn't mean it's funny.
So
you know,
call it made without an audience in mind.
Exactly. I think it was made because they all sat around going, wouldn't this be fun? Wouldn't this be great? And you know what? For them, I bet it was. And somehow, this is a thing that has been unleashed upon an unsuspecting world. So,
Yeah, that's about all I got. What do you got, Charlie?
Oh, I just, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's sort of, we've in the past we've touched on this kind of this idea of the, like kind of like you know, early drafts of things or what's, you know, like putting stuff out in the world or not putting out in the world or knowing what you have or not knowing what you have, whatever. And like, I don't know. This is sort of, this doesn't feel as like, this doesn't feel good enough to fit in that category. You know, like, here recently, I don't know if it was Vinegar Syndrome or if it was, I don't know who it was, but somebody put out just very recently did a restoration of an early John Waters film called Multiple Maniacs. And if you've not seen Multiple Maniacs or Eat Your Lipstick or some of those other Waters early stuff, like they're not, like they're, some of them are not easy to watch or they're just kind of eh, they're kind of unpleasant. But like Multiple Maniacs has got like a major kind of, it's kind of spark to it. And there's a real life to it, a vibrance to it. They're not just making it for their friends. I mean, Waters has kind of said like they kind of did turn a corner at times between just like how to entertain each other and then figure out how to like play to an audio, you know, play in art houses and stuff and like how to, you know, expand what some of the stuff that they're doing, however crazy and awful it might be. And then you get like the Jim Van Bebbers of the world or the crazy fucker that made Gator Bait or Last House in the World.
Or the fucking like Bill Zebub or whatever, like you've got the folks that are doing very masturbatory shot on video things.
Oh, for sure. And it's like, but it's kind of one of those things where I just kind of, I'm going to say this the right way exactly. This isn't good enough to be in that conversation because I think the things that are in that conversation are people that could sit down and make a 10-minute argument as to why they actually cared about what they were doing. And I just don't know that when this is the end result, like I was just thinking about Troma, you know, and like, I know you and the two of you all are like maybe slightly different ends of that. Like I have much more, I give a little more grace to them than the average person just because I always admired Lloyd so much and a lot of their older stuff I really like. But like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that in the Troma catalog that the average person can't really stand. But like, I don't think this is part of that conversation. I think it's too good. I think this is just sort of like, I don't know how you get to the end of making this thing, edit it as such as it is, and cut in some of the god-awful music choices and all the rest of the stuff and get to the end of it and go, you know, I wonder if we wouldn't be better served just to wrap a cinder block on this, throw this in the lake and go have lunch. Like, it is sort of like, that might have been a better service. And maybe that means that I'm selecting out what people can do for art, what people can't do for art, but yeah, tough shit. Like I felt not only insulted by this thing, but like, I felt like you can't be that fucking deluded. You know, like we watched the one with the Hellbenders, like we were talking about like being steeped in your own well. Whereas like this one, I think this is delusional. This is just delusional. Like this isn't just sort of like, oh, well, there's a certain type of person or there's like this is a certain market for this or there's a certain whatever. I just think this is just sort of like the movie. And it's just sort of like, and it's just like, I'm not gonna be flipped off by a bunch of no talent morons. Like, I won't have that happen. And so I don't accept it. I reject it, as Josh would say. So I was very upset by this. And like, to me, it's sort of like, just in raw materials alone, they could have been, I mean, shit, fucking, okay, go back and watch Nolan's student film or like M. Night Shyamalan's student film. They're his early stuff. Like, they're not any good, but they're not bad. Like, you can dig with 17 bucks and a garage full of stuff. Both Nolan and M. Night Shyamalan did stuff in their late teens, early 20s into school that is like, they were trying. They were really trying. And it's like, there's no try here. And it's just sort of like, and it's just, I'm not going to be sneered at by a bunch of morons hanging outside of Hot Topic. Like, fuck off. With the exception, when the one metal guy did wear a King Diamond shirt, and that was cool because I like King Diamond.
I saw that too.
But besides that, I felt profoundly insulted, more so than I probably have ever done by a film. I felt so insulted by this, and I was just sort of like,
"So what's your number?
What's the lowest I can do?"
Generally, we stop at zero.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll give a 0.25 for the King Diamond shirt because that's rad. So I'll go 0.25. 0.25 out of 10. I don't even want to jizz on your face.
Yeah.
Because that was a song choice, God damn it! God.
Was it?
God, they stop in the middle of this movie to have a sex scene that nobody asked for or wanted or ever could. Ugh. I could not masturbate to this.
And do not make it again.
I do not really want them to mech it again.
Yep. The
refrain from meching it again.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. I mean, this is the worst thing. You know, it was always like, oh, the final. No, this is infinitely worse than that. The only perhaps reason to say the final is still no. I said something else is worse than the final, but the reason like that would be one of like the worst films we've ever seen is like I don't think you can call this a film. You know, this is a bunch of people hanging on a weekend and slapping their way through a dumb fucking movie. It's awful. It's so bad. It's yeah. Troy, come on, dude. I thought we were cool. Anyway, so, yeah, this is a 0.
Did you go lower than me, bitch?
0. What was yours again?
0.25.
0.25.
Oh, dang it. I was going to go lower than you. Okay, fine. 0.25 from Charlie. So if I can't go lower than Charlie, it's a 0.25000000001.
And henceforth, Matt has relinquished the ability to give Josh shit about non-full number ratings.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Yes. I didn't think of that. Something positive happened because of this movie. It made Matt make a quarter rating. Loving it.
God damn it.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about. Like, I can watch a schlocky movie, and I kept repeating that to myself, because the genius of this movie is that if you go on at length about how shitty it is, you're just belaboring the point. Like, you're not telling the filmmaker something they don't know.
I would hope
not. They know the movie's shitty, too. It's just like, so it's almost critic-proof. And, like, I saw a bunch of positive reviews where people are just like, fuck yeah, low-budget pictures delivering again, so good to see Teen Ape and something. Like, ugh, I don't know if I can have a conversation with you if you're just digging that shit. So, yeah, I don't know. It's the Wesley Willis of movies in that I don't understand why anybody would celebrate the fact that it exists. So,
that deep pull there, Mr. Knight.
I would give it a...
No, that was a pretty good pull. Yeah.
0.25 out of 10 as well. Long topless scenes. Like, did the scene last for a long time? No, that's not what I'm talking
about.
Yeah. Like, why the long? No, never mind.
Mm. Oh, so, shit. I just caught finally, that now.
You don't want to catch anything from this.
Yeah, no.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like my TV could probably use a round of antibiotics after watching this.
Yeah.
Yeah. May have given my TV an STD. We'll see. Why was the old lady not old and Velma from Scooby-Doo? Do we know?
And, you know what? We can't.
Yes.
We can't psychoanalyze this, dude. Mind.
Okay, we won't go too deep. We'll move on. Let's finish up strong then with the Hamiltons, or Los Hamiltons.
I like that. That's funny.
So this is basically We Are What We Are. Instead of cannibals, they're vampires. And instead of being amazing, it's not.
Yeah. Well,
gotcha.
It's been a good week.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, good night. Good night, everybody.
This is one of those ones where, like, we've done some very, 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 very slow budget. And if this thing's budget was over $100,000, I would be very, very surprised. Cause I'm guessing 60, 70, 80-ish, maybe. Yeah, just based on time frame and like, you know, a few other things. I mean, who knows, but I would, it's gotta be under 100,000.
This is part of the 8 films. This is
part of the first group. I think, if I'm not mistaken.
2006.
Yeah, this was part of the first group. Yeah, cause this was part of the group where, this is one of the ones that I missed. It was one of us in the Bay Area and escaping to the theater. And this is one of the ones I missed. The timing didn't work. This is one where I will say from the onset that, like, I feel like there is half of a thing that is a quite cool thing that I quite like. There's half of a thing that I just don't understand why it's the thing. So, like, there's parts of it that I really, really dig and I really admire them for, and I go, go on. And then there's other parts of it, I just kind of was like, what the ever loving? So then you get to the end of it, you're like, well, how do I marry these two things together? Like, I don't know.
Well, dig into it, because I think you like this one the most of the three of us. So, you know, what worked, what didn't?
Well, I think there, I think it breaks down to three questions, which I think will keep, make it, keep it from you from kind of meandering, verbally meandering around. Diary of the Mouth, I believe Socrates called it. But, so I think there's like kind of, there's three central questions to this. One is, as a viewer, how accepting can you be of a vampire swerve when there's nothing that leads up to it that, that will give us the vampire swerve? That's, to me, that's the first question. The second question is, like, if half your cast can act and half your cast can't act, is this sort of the 5 pounds of manure and 5 pounds of potato salad analogy from Matt from a while ago? That's the second question. Mm-hmm. And then the third question is, like, if you have great set pieces and great places to film things or whatever else, like, could you do more with less? Could you cut out tons of dialogue? Could you cut out less, you know, a bunch of the stuff in there and just let the environment do the work? And so I feel like those are the three main questions in this. Because for the first question, the vampire thing, you gotta earn a hard swerve. And I don't know that this necessarily earns that swerve, although I do like a non-traditional vampire thing. I think the left turn is a little bit too hard of a left turn.
Are we calling it a swerve?
Oh yeah, 100%.
I mean, well, it's a swerve.
For me, like,
it's not a what the twist, but I mean, it is definitely just like, here's a different take than the traditional one on a genre. Right.
Well, I mean, like, they go out in the sunlight. There's no fangs. There's no.
Right, but I don't think that that's like, because that's all from the beginning. It's not like at the end where you find out like they've been dead the whole time. Like, you kind of get hints dropped through. Like, okay, they're vampires, but they're obviously they function on different rules. So I feel like it's not like, you know, it's the difference between like a what's the pretentious lady that does the romance language era vampires. Anne Rice vampires, Blade vampires, and 30 Days of Night vampires. You know, like, they're all slightly different, you know, iterations on a theme. And I feel like this is an iteration that goes really far afield from traditional vampirism. But I don't think you're supposed to be at the end going, what? They were vampires the whole time? I think we're just going to be like, oh, so these vampires, the only thing about them that makes them recognizable vampires to us is that they drink blood. Apparently everything else is just normal, I guess.
At the very beginning, we're like, our family is different. You don't know how different we are. Ugh. And then they come downstairs and brother's making breakfast, and they're like, what's the fucking point? Why are you doing that? Like, well, that's what families do. And then they all throw their food away. It's like, oh, okay, so vampires.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much the way that the movie was framed out for me.
Because I'm with Charlie on the idea that I like people taking a thing and doing, you know, like the Fast Zombies was fun. You know, like iterating on a theme I think is really cool. I just wish this one had done it better. But anyway, interrupted you, Charlie. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I guess I'm a little bit surprised because, like, I don't, you know, maybe I'm just sort of a little dim, but, like, I just didn't think that there was enough out loud to, you know, like, I think you can make the leap or the jump or the thought or the whatever, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I just sort of, when they show the kid with the fangs, it was like, to me, that was the first direct way that they acknowledge, you know, being vampires. Cause like, they go out in the sunlight, you know, and none of that stuff. And I just kind of feel like, well, you know, like, if you're not going to give me anything that tells me one way, like, okay, what was that one that we watched, the Australian one, Thirst? You know, like, Thirst is like, you know, there's no really supernaturally stuff in there, but then they got like this, like, you know, little fang implants, and they got like the whole like milking facility and stuff. And so that becomes a different thing entirely. It goes even away from vampires into even away from cult. You pass the vampire exit, pass the cult exit, you're just heading to crazy town. Like, it's just kind of just nuts, like just weird, far afield. Whereas like something where, the one with Bowie, The Hunger.
Yeah.
You know, where they flitter around the outsides of these things, but when it's all, there's really only a few impactful scenes to bulk of that thing, where it's more style and substance, really. Whereas like with something like this, like, you know, the blood thing or the fuck up the breakfast thing or whatever else, like, you know, maybe it's just sort of your expectation goes in, like, you know, vampires, you know, fit these 9 criteria, and if it's not this, then it's different. So I don't mean like it's like a shocking thing at the end. I just think that, like, when he comes up with the fangs, like, I could have also accepted, like, cult. You could have accepted a blood cult. I could have accepted, you know, leech people. I could have accepted a lot of different things.
Yeah, or just cannibals in general. Yeah,
because like, cause that plays a role just... in the original We Are, the Mexican one. Blood part of it plays a role, too, in that
yeah,
also.
Yeah, I mean, I think just for whatever reason, though, for me, this was... And I didn't know shit about this going into it. At least if I had ever heard of it, I didn't remember it. But, yeah, for some reason, I went, oh, so they're fucking some kind of weird-ass vampire? Because I was like, oh, they can go outside in their light. So there's different vampire rules in this universe. And then, yeah, you get the Fang reveal. But that wasn't like a, oh, they're vampires. That was a, oh, there's the money shot to prove they're vampires. And then I think they also tried to have another money shot with having us meet Lenny. Lenny, is it, you know?
They're, yeah.
Which is like, I think this is supposed to be shocking, but this is kind of the only thing it could have been.
But it's also like, that just completely breaks any semblance of making fucking sense in this thing.
Oh, see, I think it actually makes sense in their universe.
We're going to take him out of this thing that's been like banging on the door and to say he would have run around killing everybody. They're just like, hey, Skipper, you done playing...
You done wiping your poop on the walls?
let's go. And he's just fucking fine. But, so there's a scene early on where emo kid is, like, running his tongue across his teeth in a really, like, way.
Which, when you say emo kid.
So when they start talking about it.
When you said emo kid, which one do you mean? I just want to make sure I understand what you're talking about.
That's a good point.
Oh, fucking Vampire Diaries. The kid who's,
the conflicted
videotaping
kid.
Everything.
Oh, because you got matter. That guy.
Yeah, the one who couldn't act like he was dying if you shot him.
And the emo kid with his emo hair. Because then you
that reminds me too, Charlie. Don't let me forget to revisit the idea that you think some of these people can act. Because I'm very curious to see who you think that is. Because I was not impressed by anyone.
You got emo kid. You got Twincest, who like. One of them looks like the guy from Supernatural in a weird way, and one of them is awful. And then you have the older brother with his weird-ass comb-over who's being dad. Mm. And, yeah. Ugh. It's just frustrated me deeply. Because they say shit like, we've lived in 6 houses in the past 2 years. And then you go through their house, and under their house is this giant murder factory. It's like, it's gotta be real damn hard to find a giant murder factory house every 3 months.
And the fact that they are clearly, because of the ending of the movie, buying these houses.
Yeah.
They're not renting. So.
It's like, so.
What?
Why are you setting up a murder factory every time you buy a house? Why don't you just, like, grab somebody and off them real quick and then go back to your business?
Yeah.
Like. Not yet. None of this is really thought through at all. None of it is well acted, and none of it is well shot or lit or anything. So,
were you guys as baffled as I was to discover this film has a sequel?
Oh yeah, The Thompsons.
The Thompsons. Yep.
I am now baffled. Yes. Yep.
Megan found, and I found out Megan found because of the screech that came from the other room.
Megan on a weekly basis, just willing her coolness.
Yeah, just the level of sensibilities being offended was off the charts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like anybody who allows that to go out into the world as a reaction is all right in my book. Like, yeah. Like, this is fantastic. Like,
are you fucking kidding me?
I love it.
I was like, watch, there's a goddamn sequel. It's called The Thompsons. And we were about halfway through it, and I went, how much you want to bet we know what the last line of the movie is? Because they've already talked about how they have to move a lot. And sure enough, the last line of the movie, after they've had to leave, is, hi, we're The Thompsons. And I'm like, yep, there you are. And apparently I was just looking at the IMDb or the Wikipedia, and they are on the run from the law. So they go to England to look for an ancient enclave of vampires. And what they find may, I'm not even reading it right now, I'm just paraphrasing the florid language, you know, what they mind may end their family or slash their throats or some shit. And it's just like, dude, no.
Oh,
they're going from alien to aliens.
Yeah, it is a clunky, no, it's from alien, it's from alien to mutant aliens, I think is the transition.
Oh, there you go.
From Alien to Extra.
God damn it, you beat me to it.
Well, it's like, it's basically like, you know, it was the, shit. Is it the third season? Which is, well, I'm trying to remember, it's as if I don't have access to the internet, but whatever season Dexter it is that's got Bill Murray's daughter in it, the real hot lady.
I've never seen it.
Watch the first four seasons, not 5 through 8. First four are fantastic. 5 through 8 are fucking terrible. But there's one season that's got, Bill Murray's daughter, and there's a protagonist, a British lady, is very hot, and is like great. But there's this sequence at the end of one of the episodes where like Dexter ends up in another country and like pursuing somebody, and it's sort of like it just everything about it is just not right. Like it is like the lighting looks weird and the way it's shot is weird and the everything about it, even the music, it just every part of it just feels like it's so tacked on. So like take that feeling of that one scene in Dexter, which just fits nothing into the rest of it. It's just, everything seems wrong. So take this movie, like stick it in another country, kick the movie in the nuts, and then wipe Vaseline on its eyeballs, and then like show it that scene from Dexter, and that's the sequel, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't imagine anybody thinking that anybody would give enough fucks about this family. That they want to watch more of, like, is the family going to stick together or are they going to get torn apart by, like, what?
Who cares?
What did you show us about this family that needs to stick together? You showed us, like, the one lady is just psycho. The guy, the twincest guy is a bully and an idiot and psycho.
And also psycho, yeah.
Who is, yeah, nothing but relentlessly cruel to the kid. The brother is just delusional and trying to play house.
Well, because he's both closeted as a vampire and as a gay man, apparently.
I guess.
And so he's just he's striving for any grasp at like 1950s normalcy, because his language is also wildly outdated. Like he keeps inserting shitty slang from like the 20s into his things. And at first I was like, are they acting like a family and that's why twincest is happening? But they're actually all like really, really old. And it's like, you know, you learn the rules of this universe. Like we're not made, we're born. So these are just regular folks that you're just born craving blood, which actually is fine. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting if someone else is making the movie because these people couldn't make it interesting.
And let me just say that this kid is so unpleasant in his emo that he makes me long for the kid from the first Purge.
Yeah.
It's like, put that fuck ass back on the screen, because when this movie started, and he's doing the American Beauty thing, and he's just, just oozing ennui all over the place, just like, oh, please don't make me watch this fucking kid. Oh, please. And it, like, Jess is sitting watching with me, and we're like, this isn't over yet. This isn't ending yet.
It'll never be
and
over.
And harder. And more. She's just like sitting tapping on her laptop, occasionally looking up and going, are they even trying to string together scenes to make a thing? They're like, yeah, no.
No, the, not really, no. And somehow, that is not the most punchable face in this movie. That, particular accolade belongs to, the leather sniffer, who is the brother to Kitty, or no, cousin maybe, because I think it's uncle and cousin show up to look for Kitty after they kill her. And so it's, like, the most accurate portrayal of a security guard I've ever seen is just the full-on just leather sniffer, like, I'm not a cop, but I want you to think I am so bad.
Oh, yes.
And
yeah,
that's the only thing that was cast routine. Perfectly, and I think acted perfectly. That maybe is the – okay, I still haven't given you time to answer, Charlie, but I think that is the only good actor in this movie, because I was like, I want to throttle you just like every security guard in real life. So I guess – you're actually holding it down quite flat because gross, you know, that's the joke from like an old Family Guy episode where they talk to a security guard and like, excuse me, sir. And he goes, it's officer. She goes, it's barely, sir. Like, that is my opinion of every security guard ever. And this guy exudes that in the same way that douchey guy exudes that ennui. That's so annoying. But anyway. And by the way, multiple of my friends are security guards, so suck it, friends. So, Charlie,
oh,
what do you think was good in this?
Oh, I just, so let me say the best way to say this. Like, I think there are people of talent in the movie that are completely undercut by garbage material. Both of the twins I've seen in other stuff, and they are both, I think, competent actors. They're given shit all to do in this movie, but that's...
Yeah, I can't imagine there's anything to work with here.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the thing that happens with a few of these actors. The girl, not the blonde victim, but the kind of wavy-haired victim lady, she's another one where I think, like, I do think she has...
The one that lasts longer? That gets rescued and then killed by...
Yeah, the one who's, like, trying to kind of talk her way out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one she's, like, she's trying to talk her way out of it, that kind of deal. I think she is good. But again, anybody that I think is good in this is undercut by the material, by the dialogue
and most likely by their director.
Yeah. I mean, that may play a role in it too. We're like,
I feel like it's not, you know, even what's on the page isn't good in the first place, but they're also, this to me smacks of people casting about to do the best they can and having no strong hand guiding.
Yeah. They're trying stuff without an idea that, like, okay, you've tried this. Let's move that 5 degrees to the left.
And therefore, they're pretty inconsistent.
And pop that up by a measure of 1.5. Like, you know, a buddy of mine, director, I've watched him do that, where, like, he will literally be like, okay, this part of it was really good. Cool. Let's do this part of it here. Let's pick it up by 2 times the speed, and we're going to drop this thing, and let's try this other thing. Okay, cool. Awesome. You try that thing. That was good. Okay, and just, like, pop it up, pop it up, pop it up, pop it up. And it's, like, it's not because he's, like, on speed. It's because, like, you've tried a thing. Let's do the next thing. Try this thing. Cool. We got a good look there. Let's try this other thing. Whereas I think you said, like, striking out different ways in this. That's where I think, like, a few of these actors who are, I think are good and show that they're good despite the material in a few scenes, not a lot of them, are undercut by the, like, okay, perfect example is when emo kid goes and confronts the Tucked brother at, like, the slaughterhouse place or whatever. That scene and the way that that's set up is good. The stuff that's said is no good. And you can't look good saying dumb shit. Like, you just can't. It doesn't work.
Unless you're Harrison Ford.
It's like, or Kathy Bates.
I was going to say, yeah, there are a few exceptions here and there, but by and large, like, you just can't do, like, this is my staff of power, Jeremy Irons, and just, like, have that work. Like, it just doesn't work. And so, like, there are multiple scenes, like the scene where they're pursuing the neighbor girl, Kitty, you know, like, and when female twin, you know, says they hear Kitty, Kitty, like, that line itself is dumb, but 5 seconds later, I felt myself go, gah. Like, I didn't, that's just like, this girl's got no fucking shot. And that in and of itself was just kind of, like, unpleasant. The more dickhead bully twin, when he de-amps down a little bit, and is just snarling, like, that's good. It's the big bro stuff that's awful. But the problem is that's 90% of the time. It's just that 10% of the time that works good. Mm-hmm. It's that lower snarl when he's not told to amp to be bigger. You know, it's that just quieter, smaller stuff. That part of it's good. So, I mean, like, I can see good in there. I really can. It's just like time and time again. They're just giving.
There's still good in them. You can feel it.
They're just giving shit to say is the problem. It's just like, and that's sort of, I don't know. Maybe I've gotten more and more sensitive to that. It's just like, it's really starting to bug me. Like, if it sets my ear off, like, it's just sort of like, then I stop paying attention to what's happening. I stop paying attention to the story. I stop paying attention to the conflict. I just go, well, why the fuck? Like, somebody had to have said that out loud before they started shooting, at least once. Crying out loud. Pardon me. I just brought up so much bile. This is like, you know.
Hey, Rick.
Like, what did I tell you something about dialogue? I'll tell you all, dialogue. No, I don't know. I've gotten more sensitive to it, and I just sort of like, and so in this one, like, so I guess just to sum this up, so we don't belaboring on it, or we, if I'm not belaboring this on forever, is that, like, if you were given a sharper script, and if they abandoned this idea that, like, the born or made thing, where they made nothing of, and if they were literally, like, born, like, grown in the ground, like, come out all gnarled and freaky and get conditioned into people. If you can't do this, like, weird kind of roving band sort of family story and really make it a thing. Cause it's like, I like this idea of just sort of like this group having to sort of be together in that way. And I think that's cool. And I just feel like they had 9 ideas on the wall for what the central part of the story would be. And they just didn't pick the right one necessarily. However much I like the group, idea.
Well, it's like they did a movie that did that well, and it was Near Dark.
I love cutting out that movie. Oh!
And they got what was essentially fucked up about, like, we're gonna pretend to be a family, even though really we're just kind of these monstrous things, in a way that, like, then Twilight came along and played it perfectly straight. Like, we're pretending to be a family, and it's perfectly awesome, and isn't that great? And, like, no, it's deeply fucked up, as Near Dark illustrated. But then, like, this one is just like, we're actually a family, and Mom and Dad, we're holding the family together, and we have to fucking tie people up in the basement and be vague about what we're doing to them. And just like, eh. I can't. It's like, this is a movie that has not seen any other movies.
This is...
Because, like, the filmmakers clearly seem to have this, like, we're doing this novel take on this, you know, nobody's ever done a thing like this. Like, well, they fucking have, man, and they did it right. Like, you never...
Or maybe, this is just, like, the bar is at indie... Go ahead, is at indie, like, indie underground film festival... Like, that's the bar, maybe, or something? And God, I felt guilty even saying that out loud, because that's a shitty thing to think, but, like, no, maybe they just, maybe your trajectory is low, and so you don't aim high, maybe. I'm not sure, I don't have that answer, but Josh, you kind of hit the nail on the head, like, you can make those dynamics, like, fuck, there's one that eventually we're gonna get to, there's a couple of them. There's the Korean film Thirst, that also Kiss of the Damned with my girlfriend Roxanne McKenna in there, which has got that weird dynamic where you have to play against, like, natural instinct as an animal versus, like, a people, and like and how all that stuff works. Right. And it can be done well. It can work, you know. Like, so I don't know. I just think maybe the bar was too low. Maybe the expectation or the challenge wasn't high enough or something. But I see a lot of good in here. I think the end result is just not so much good.
I just feel like this is another one of those films where, based on the Wikipedia quotes from reviewers, we are, or at least myself and Josh, as seems to be the more common option, are finding ourselves on the wrong side of the consensus, which is you've got someone from Variety saying... in a positive review, refuses to play by most of the genre rules. Someone from Dread Central gave it 3.5 out of 5, calling it a damn solid film. Brad Miska of Bloody Disgusting gave it 3.5 out of 5 stars and called it a truly unique horror film, which leads up to one final moment that is sure to leave you in a state of shock. And Bloody Disgusting, to me, is very much known for its hyperbole. But what the fuck, right, dude? There's no... What? No. There's no... Unique, sure, it did try something different. There's no shocking, crazy dude. And, like, apparently, though, most folks seem to dig this movie of the usual go-tos. Now, I don't... Again, I feel like everybody watched a different movie than me.
Yeah, I am baffled at the praise for it.
And the sequel.
And the sequel. Very baffled by that.
But,
like, it's, you know, it's not Asylum bad, no. But it's... There's definitely some heart to this, but it's so disjointed. It's so just cluelessly put together, and ugh, it's not a thing. I didn't enjoy it. It's barely a movie to me.
I was just
kidding. Yeah. So,
Josh, that was exactly what my brain did. This is sort of like, I just had that little bit of, like, you know, Billy Joel on the piano kind of thing in the back of my head. Like, oh, Josh will get that a lot quicker than I will.
So, I don't know. Should we wrap on this?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
Yeah, I couldn't stand our protagonist. And that's always a troubling thing. And then having the stuff that he's shooting in the camera be stuff that we see on the screen. It's like, no, never. Never do that. Never. There were maybe one or two scenes where, like, oh, okay, something's happening here. And, like, I liked the Truth or Dare game, even though it was just rock stupid, because it at least developed a little bit of tension, maybe.
Did it?
But then it just stopped. Like, I turned to Jess when the screen went black and was like, I guess we're done with that scene now?
Yeah. Huh.
So I was pretty bored slash irritated by this. Maybe even more irritated than I was with Carnage for the Destroyer, because I knew what Carnage for the Destroyer was going to be.
Yeah.
And this is just like, this is just clueless. So it's like a 3.5 out of 10 Vampire Diaries. Vampire Diaries.
Yep. man, like again, I like the idea of iterations on a theme. I think that's cool. I think taking the vampire, the zombie, the werewolf was, you know what, and finding a way to make me have to pay attention again because I can't assume I know all the rules is, it's a fun idea. That's great. I hope people keep making those kind of movies. This one, and I even think the premise is, you know, like, okay, yeah, it's just some people are born vampires, no special powers, nothing supernatural. The closest I think we maybe got to that was there's a moment when female twincest moves a little too quickly in a scene.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell if that was a camera thing, like when they make things all wobbly, or if that was actually meant to be supernatural. But other than that, they seem perfectly mortal, because, like, you can knock them out with a crowbar. And, you know, mom and dad died in a tragic accident. Well, clearly it ain't sunlight, so maybe just a car accident. Maybe you are just fully vulnerable. You simply have to drink blood. Nothing else about your human physiology has changed. That's interesting. In a better movie. The acting is distractingly bad. And it's an ugly little film. And not in, like, the cool way when you're like, I love, like, really gross, ugly little films that are mean and gross. This is, like, just, I mean, this just, it's not...
It's nothing not pleasant
special
to look at.
It's the movie I would make because I have no aesthetic sense for, like mise-en-scene and like how to like make something look okay. Like, that I rely on other people around me to tell me if something looks good or not, because I'm perfectly comfortable just two people being talking heads and using dialogue to move all the action forward with literally no action. Fortunately, the people around me smack me in the back of the head and go, that's awful. You're the worst. And so like, I would write this movie or a movie like this and not get it. And I can kind of see how you could fall into that trap. Like, but won't it be fascinating to hear what these people's inner monologues are? No, no, it won't. Especially after like the fifth Hobbit false ending where we keep having one more scene with one more bit of pretentious voiceover from Emo Kid. And it's like, return your notebook to the 13-year-old you stole it from and go bite a neck. Also, it's odd that they think the most efficient way to get blood out of a human body is to bite their lower lip. So, yeah, this to me is a 2 out of 10. 2 out of 10? How the fuck do they have a social worker?
Well, the thing with biting the lower lip is then, if, like, you keep them alive for a little longer when they talk, it sounds funny.
Good point. I stand corrected. Like, 2.5. Nope, you're right. 2.5 out of 10.
I'm probably doing more like hopeful cheerleading for Rudy than I am expecting he's going to make the big play necessarily in this one. That being said, like, you know, I would go if 5 is Switzerland. And considering the bar has been set for earlier films at a much higher level, that was very surprising. So I would say, and that's not a criticism of anybody in particular. I just sort of saying, like, you know, we've got some range. It's a safe place. It's a safe place. We can talk about things. So I would say 5.5. I would say 5.5 out of 10. 5.5 out of 10. Go feed Lenny and tell him about the rabbits.
Yeah, we had to have that conversation too after watching this. It's like, do they think they were really clever with that?
It's just like, oh god, no, don't. It's in.
I was so annoyed when they pulled a kid out of there, and like we go into the room, and it's like a kid's room just with some stuff thrown around. I'm like, no, this is not the creature you've been showing us for the rest of the movie. Like, you can't just. There are rules. This is not.
Do you think that there maybe was a chance that, like,
this is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps? Sorry, what?
It's just like, the very next thing when you said that was like, my brain went, fudge packer? Like, oh, we were talking about Cannibal earlier. That's what it was. But like, do you think that?
No, that's not the Alps. That's the Rockies.
Yeah, I get the kind of all mixed. Yeah, I don't know. My topography is just a bit rusty.
Rockies 3 through 5 specifically.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's Drago fit in the whole deal? But, do you think that there's any chance that like the child was not their first? Like, they had a monster or some kind of feral thing, you know, or like something.
That they couldn't afford to show us?
They just couldn't do it. You know, like, they were like, we're going to do the thing. And then, like, yeah, we can't do the thing. Like, shit. Yeah, like, it makes me wonder.
Well, like I said, I think it makes sense in universe. If you are born a vampire, you know, children like goldfish or dogs will eat until they vomit. They're stupid. And so if what they eat is human blood, then yeah, a kid is going to, assuming it has presumably some kind of supernatural strength, the ability to attack someone, it will simply do that until it is satiated with no regard for well-being or whatnot. Kids have no sense of self-preservation, so it makes sense actually that you would have to lock up a small child or restrain them or hide them away from the world and control, you know, that until they're old enough to hit kind of the age of some amount of reason. To be able to not just be running down the street biting every kid on the playground. That actually makes sense in universe of the rules they establish. They don't do it well.
But then
it's clunky.
You've also got, like, we gotta let Lenny out of the box early. Oh my god, is it gonna be okay? We let you out of the box early and you turned out alright. Like, what?
It's like, well, clearly he didn't.
You know. He turned out emo. It's like, Edward Cullen is just like, dude, lighten up.
Yeah. I love my job.
All right, so those were the three movies that we watched, and the reason that at least I didn't turn off at least one of them midway through
I felt committed to finishing all of them.
Yeah. It was a mandate from one of our listeners who not only is cool enough to interact with us and give us valuable feedback and liven up our Facebook feed, but gives us a little bit of money on the Patreon every month. So we celebrate you, Troy. We think you're totally awesome. And I hope you enjoyed us ripping apart the movies that you gave us to watch.
Oh, and yeah, you know, thanks, Troy. And shout out to Troy's podcast, which we do every now and again, but we should continue to do, Slaughterhouse Princess. You can hear him justify these movies to you by looking through their archives and seeing what it is he thought was good enough that he thought they were worth suggesting to us when given a bully pulpit. So, I don't know. Maybe you'll agree with them. Maybe you'll agree with us. But we'll see. It'll be interesting.
By the way, should you be a Patreon and decide that you want to give us some movies to watch, they don't have to be punitive.
Yeah.
Just gonna put that out there. They could be super cool movies that you're excited for us to see. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our films for next week. So for next week, we're going to hit up, because we don't want other people to make us watch shitty movies. God damn it. We're gonna watch Species, Species 2, and Species 3. Because we are masters of our own fates, and we can decide to watch shitty movies all on
That's
our own.
That's true.
Yes.
So.
We can make our own bad decisions,
at least
Troy.
One...
Jerk.
Yeah, geez, Troy. You're not my dad. You're not my real dad. You're not my crawdad. So...
You're not even a lobster! What the hell?
I mean, you were stuck there a lot this week, but...
By the way, I watched The Lobster over the weekend.
That's
wonderful,
highly
recommend
isn't it?
The what?
Wild, Weird, and Wonderful. Yeah,
it's
The Lobster.
It's really, really good.
It's a conversation for another time. Anyway.
Yeah. Chubby Colin Farrell and Love is a Lie.
It's delightful.
So, just to sum it up real quick. Anyway, yeah, Species 1, 2, 3 next week. Our short is called Vicious, and that will be linked in the show notes if I remember to do it and I'm not a total fuckass like I was last week. And you can find all of our episodes on hshd.podbean.com. You can subscribe to the RSS feed there and you will get the episodes delivered to you in a timely fashion. And you can talk to us on Facebook at /horrordog and we are reddit.com/r/hshd. Thanks again, Troy. And I've been Josh this entire time and I say meh.
As far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
You say that with such a different resolute growl after being out at Fest for just one weekend. Like, it just sort of drops the octave.
It doesn't take long.
It really gets down into there. I remember that growl.
Yeah, this is more voice than I've had all day, so I'm actually very impressed I made it through this whole thing.
it's like, oh, that's a little rumble. This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care. Have a good week. Quick reminder, if you've not seen the advertisements and if you've not seen the trailers, please don't watch them. This week, there's a nice little film from a gentleman named Fede Alvarez, who you might know, who directed a little film called The Evil Dead, a film called Don't Breathe. And it's out this week. And it's real good. And it's real puckery. And it's a bit gnarly. And it's a mean little motherfucker. So, if you could stick with us for Green Room and Blue Ruin and things like that, go see Don't Breathe. It's in a shit slot at the end of the summer, and I'm frustrated with that. So I wish I got a better slot, because it's a really good, mean old movie. So go see that. Go see that this upcoming week, along with the Three Species movies. But Don't Breathe is out this week, so go see that too. Bye!
Good. Anybody need a thing?
I could pee.
Oh, good.
Okay. I'm going to.
Oh, good.
I realized I just would. I'm Woody Allen-ing my way. Oh, fuck me. I'm gonna go.
Not only that, you have the capacity, but you have the desire.
Where there is a will, there's a Willy.
How you feeling today? Really Willy, you know.